Transportation Nation is supported by the Rockefeller Foundation, whose transportation initiative is promoting equitable and sustainable development in communities across the country. More at rockfound.org.
Transportation Nation is a project of The Economy Story, a public media collaboration which is made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This is Transportation Nation, a public radio reporting project about all the ways we get around. In this podcast, we're celebrating the first birthday of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, or Stimulus, which was signed into law in February of 2009. Here's your host, Andrea Bernstein.
We are talking about the stimulus with Chris Favelle and Michael Graybell of ProPublica. Michael, you've been studying this for, the last 12 months at least. What do you think?
I think what's been really interesting is sort of what was expected and sort of what we've seen. I've always thought about this question of, is the stimulus working? And I think it really depends on what you expected the stimulus to do. If you thought it was going to create a lot of new jobs and look and feel a lot like the WPA, then that's not really what we got. But if you thought it was going to stop the bleeding in the economy, save a lot of jobs, and then lay the groundwork for Obama's campaign promises and the economic agenda that he laid out in Audacity of Hope, I think you could see how the administration is coming and saying, well, it's been this resounding success, and Christina Romer said the unsung hero of the past year.
I was recently at a conference at the Hoover Institution on the economic stimulus, and they took issue with a New York Times headline that said, consensus is that stimulus has worked. What do you think?
I think it's hard to say. I think it's still a work in progress.
Politicians just love that.
But I also think that it's been somewhat invisible. It's been an invisible stimulus.
As a matter of fact, I just want to say that we're going to be talking sometime during this podcast with a road worker from Ohio whose job it is to make the stimulus visible by putting up the signs that say, this project brought to you by the American Recovery Act. So
it's been somewhat invisible, though. There's this disconnect, right, between the administration saying it's working, we've brought us back from the brink of disaster, and the American public saying, I haven't seen the stimulus. And the main reason is that so much of it has been in tax cuts and in the safety net programs like unemployment benefits and food stamps, which do eventually create jobs, but it's harder for the public to see that because it takes 10 people spending money at the local grocery store with their food stamps for somebody's one job to be saved.
Chris Favelle, you've been watching the stimulus very, very carefully. That must be very exciting, kind of like watching grass grow. Give us the progress report. I just want you to know that everyone in the studio is laughing now.
It has been exciting because, one of the things that stands out for us because we watch it so closely is that when people say the stimulus hasn't worked, I think they don't always realize that what they're talking about isn't the stimulus full stop as a unit, but really this week-by-week dripping sensation of federal dollars. And if you look at the money that's being tracked on recovery.gov, which is the main
So kind of like watching a popsicle melt.
Like a popsicle, a wonderful multicolored popsicle. only one-third of the stimulus money has actually been paid out. So when someone says either it's worked or it hasn't worked, they're really saying that one-third of it has worked or hasn't worked. I think it's probably premature to try and guess at what the impact is going to be of the stimulus as a whole once all the money is paid out. And as you may know, recently, I think 2 weeks ago, the Congressional Budget Office said the initial cost of the stimulus was too low. It's going to be about $75 billion more than first thought. So we don't know yet what the impact will be, what the final cost will be, where the money will go.
Wait. We don't know what the final cost will be? How can that be? Don't we know it's $787 billion?
Not anymore.
I'm having a finger wagged at me. Okay,
initial,
explain.
It's very, very complicated. It's very fun, too. The initial cost was estimated by the CBO, Congressional Budget Office, as $787 billion. But they then came back and said, we've looked again at these programs, and we think the next iteration of that cost will be more. It could go up beyond that. There's really no way of knowing
some
what
of the
final cost will be.
Tax cuts, safety net programs have been oversubscribed. So these were all things that were estimated and didn't have a full amount in the bill of how much they would cost.
We're talking about the stimulus with Michael Graybell, rhymes with Slaybell of ProPublica, and Chris Flavelle of ProPublica. The sense of we don't know what it will cost. So is it going to be years before we know? Months? What's the timeline on that?
Well, it could very well be years. I mean, the initial idea was try and get most of the money out the door in the first 2 years. But again, I think every estimate is going to be subject to changing times, whether it's tax rates that we can't really predict, whether it's unemployment benefits, whether it's little things in the bill like stimulus bonds that people can buy and are subsidized by the federal government. You just don't know with any of these programs how they're going to go. And so it's very hard to predict whether they'll work because you don't even know what they'll cost.
So let's talk a little bit about the different states, because this money's going out, almost all of it or much of it, through the states, right?
I think
a third of it is going out through the states.
A third of it's going out through the states. So given the fact that state governments are so highly functional, we're sitting here in a studio in New York now, we know about California's government, Illinois, all kinds of huge problems with state governments around the country. How is it going getting the money out through the states? Has that been a problematic process or a relatively smooth process?
I think it's been a pretty good process because one of the things that states have, which you need, is they've got pre-existing mechanisms to spend the money. So if you look at one of the main planks of the stimulus was giving states money to help pay their employees like teachers. Many states obviously are having budget trouble, so they've had to lay off teachers. One of the aims of the stimulus was to give them money to keep on paying those teachers who would otherwise be cut.
Which is such a hard thing to measure, right? I mean, one of the things that we're asking people now, teachers, is did you not lose your job because of the stimulus? And that really feels very different from, you know, somebody advertising and people leaving their homes and going to work.
Well, and the number they're using now is 300 education jobs are being supported, not created or saved, supported by the stimulus. So this includes pay raises or any sort of partial amount. And, you know, I think Chris is right on that. That's something that we have seen a lot of with the stimulus money is money going to states to shore up their budgets. One thing that has, you know, hasn't worked so well maybe in terms of creating as many jobs as we can as fast as we can is that there's so many layers of government that this has to go through. And there's new provisions that are attached to this money that aren't always attached when you would give out a grant or a contract, like the prevailing wage laws that haven't been set for every type of work they now are. The Buy American clauses, which always weren't, you know, which weren't always applied.
So there's a lot of sort of kind of pro-labor aspects to this that are not entirely apparent.
Yeah, you'd call it red tape, but in a sense, this is all the stuff.
Except if you're the one who's getting a job because of it or getting more money.
This is the stuff that we all kind of associate with good government and good government of having competitive bidding, having prevailing wage laws. Doesn't get the money spent fast, but it's all good government stuff, and it's all stuff that Democrats support.
My favorite line about the economic stimulus remains from Betsy Colbert column in The New Yorker about a year ago, where she said, you know, you might know that you're having a dinner party, and before the dinner party, you have to take a shower and you have to cook dinner, but it might not be a good idea to cook dinner and to take a shower at the same time. So we're going to be talking about whether 50 years from now, 60 years from now, people are going to be able to look back at the economic stimulus and say this was a stimulus-era project like we do now about projects that came from the Depression. I'm Andrea Bernstein speaking with Michael Graybell and Chris Flavelle of ProPublica.
WPA, WPA. Sleep while you work, while you rest, while you play. Lean on your shovel to pass the time away. Oh, it ain't what you do, you can jive for your pay. WPA.
That is John Ryan and the Varsity Orchestra, their song WPA. I'm Andrea Bernstein, and we're talking about the economic stimulus on the first anniversary of the economic stimulus. With me in studio here is Chris Flavelle and Michael Graybell of the nonprofit newsroom ProPublica. And joining us from San Francisco is Nathaniel Johnson from KALW. Hi, Nathaniel.
Hey there.
So, you know, we're listening to this song about the WPA, and, you know, when I think about California, the whole iconography, the whole font of the state is tied up with the WPA style. All these years later, it's still what we remember about the FDR years. Is anything happening now that, you know, our great-grandchildren might recall as something that came about as a result of the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act of 2009?
Well, bit by bit, it's certainly not on the same scale as it was in the Great Depression, you know, when they're building the Golden Gate Bridge and the Bay Bridge for the first time. And but they are working on some of these same projects. Not still since the 1930s, but they're updating them. There's a tunnel that goes through from the bay in the west through the mountains just to the east called the Caldecott Tunnel that was built in the 1930s and has this beautiful Art Deco facade, that same iconography that you're talking about. And now they're putting in a new bore. So there's now going to be four different tunnels running through the hillside there. So that's one thing.
A new bore, that's what, like a tube?
A new tube, a new tunnel, right alongside the other three tunnels that are already there.
That sounds like a huge deal for the Bay Area.
Well, it's a big deal for people that live on the other side of those mountains and want to drive in every day. But, I mean, it's certainly not as big of a deal as building that tunnel for the first time. You know, there's definitely a diminishment from the 1930s when these projects were going up and they were fresh and they were new and... There was a little bit more oomph, and we'll see if that oomph comes with the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. But it's not quite as big in California at this point.
We have been sort of talking about what kind of impact the Stimulus Act has had in the last year, and I'm wondering how it's being felt out in California with, you know, notoriously dire budgetary problems.
Yeah, well. I mean, I have been focused on transportation, and we're getting a lot of money for transportation, but the overwhelming bulk of the money that's coming into California is going to education, actually. And I know less about that, but that's kind of an interesting point. But it is being felt. There's lots of roads that are getting fixed that wouldn't be fixed if it weren't for this money. And there's a lot of projects on the horizon. And another interesting way that it's being felt is that there's some projects that the red tape of the government is actually, there's some checking being done of projects that maybe shouldn't have gone forward, that the federal government is checking and saying, wait, you guys didn't follow the rules on this one. If you're really going to do that, you should revise what you're talking about.
There's that tension again between shovel ready, let's go, let's put people to work, and let's build a worthy project. Michael Graybell of ProPublica and Chris Flavel of ProPublica, I want to sort of bring you in here to talk about this concept of shovel-ready, because I think that this has bedeviled states everywhere. What has happened, I was in Charlotte earlier this year, and the mayor at the time was a conservative Republican who was very much thought that the economic stimulus was sort of funding these kind of B-level projects that were shovel-ready because they had been around for several decades. They had gone through all the approvals, but they hadn't been funded because they weren't really that great projects. But yet now, under the Recovery Act, a lot of them are getting funded. How typical is that?
That's fairly typical, I think, we're seeing a lot of these guardrail projects and paving projects. And so in California, I mean, we're talking about sort of what will, in the larger context of what will our grandchildren remember from the stimulus package and look upon with pride. And you know, I'm sure there are people who say it, but, you know, the fourth bore of the Caldecott Tunnel, or my daddy worked in the HOV lane in western Los Angeles County, is not going to hold up there with some of the other projects. But at the same time, I think the administration would probably steer you away from roads and say, well, in a few years, we may be seeing that the stimulus helped us with the foundation for high-speed rail. It helped transform the power grid in this country in the same way that we built dams and created all this infrastructure during the New Deal. And, you know, in the same way that we brought electricity to all the rural areas in the South, we want to do the same thing with broadband. So in the first year, we haven't seen that yet, but some of those larger things of what are we going to remember 75 years from now and what are we fighting about is a lot, you know, a lot a few more years, a few more decades away.
Let's talk about that contrast. It's Chris here. The idea of you've got, you know, a couple billion dollars, you can either pave or repave all the roads in your state, or you can build one, you know, 90-mile high-speed rail line as they're doing in Florida, or they're planning to do in Florida. Great examples, because the paving or the repainting or the guardrails, you can do tomorrow, pretty much. The rail, as an example, is almost by definition transformative. It takes so long to get the environmental assessments, to get to buy the right-of-way, to find a contractor, to draw up the plans, get the plans approved, get the state on board, get the feds on board. By the time you actually do any work, if this works, we're out of the recession. And so it's a very hard for any administration to say, how do you balance these
conundrum.
Two?
So, and there are, of course, oh, by the way, we'll be talking about high-speed rail a little later on in this podcast. But there are people to whom these jobs matter a great deal. And, of course, there are the people who have the jobs. One of them is joining us now. Charlie Dilbert is calling us from Ohio. How are you?
Okay, how are you doing?
How's your winter going? How's your winter going?
It's going okay. We're down here in Cincinnati, and the snow's, I'm looking out my door, and it's about 8 or 9 inches. It's more snow than we've had in a long time.
So I'm imagining there's not much road work going on.
Not right now. No, the kind of work that I'm doing and stuff is kind of hindering on the weather, you know, getting warmer, not staying colder.
So tell me, but you were working before it got cold and snowy.
Yeah.
On the roads. What were you doing?
The company I was working for, it's A&A Safety. We do traffic control. Like, you know, if you got a road that's under construction, we'll put the signs up to alert you to, you know, the construction areas, potentially those concrete barriers and stuff that are in the road to divert you into another lane. We put those in also, and we spray the lines on the road, to, you know, the yellow and white lines, and we also do numerous other things that are pertaining to that. But again, you know, the weather kind of got us in December there. It started snowing and stuff, and you know, it got cold. So, you know, we were impacted by it, but hopefully we're looking at going back here probably in March or April. A lot of the company's work we have this year coming up, from what I understand, is part of this Reinvestment Act money and everything. We've got signs that we're installing on the highways, and we're also doing a couple projects up in the northern part of Ohio that are, you know, that have this stimulus money tied to them.
So what were you doing before you got this job working on the roads?
I was working for a decking company. They're out of Cincinnati, Ohio. Also, they do the concrete buildings, the decks and stuff,
so
parking
garages. You already had a job.
I had a job with that company and subsequently got laid off with them. I was off probably about 4.5-5 months. And I'd been talking to this A&A Safety for a while on and off, trying to get with them. And just happened their Dayton division needed somebody. And I applied for the job and got it.
So you're somebody who can pretty clearly trace his job to the economic stimulus.
Oh, absolutely. Our company's been a direct, reaped some of the benefits of this right now, and I subsequently there's going to be some more stuff coming, I'm sure. They had to jump through some hoops, just as I think a lot of companies did, to get this money. It just wasn't, you just walked up to a window and said, here I am. You know, it's, you know, there was paperwork and other things, from what I gather, that they had to do to get this. And you know, our government does have a lot of hoops and things you got to jump through to get things, but I think in the long run, from what I'm seeing, as far as construction, in my field of work, it kind of dried up as far as the buildings part of it. The road work has really started going, and I think it's going to get better as time goes on.
Did you, when the Economic Stimulus Act was being debated and passed just about a year ago, were you following that?
Yes.
And did you think it would help you get a job?
You know, in the short term, no. In the long term, yes. Because, you know, it takes a while for that money to get to us, to get down to us. It just seemed like to me that, you know, they'd been talking about different parts of it, the aspects of it, and when it was going to go out. And it sounded like in the beginning it was going to be this huge dam breaking. And it wasn't. It's been kind of slow. But, you know, once it's gotten to where it's going, I get updates all the time through our state of Ohio as far as, you know, where some of this money's going. And like the one gentleman, I heard him talking about education and other things.
So
you know, those jobs for me also were a possibility had that money went a little quicker than what it did.
You're collecting unemployment now?
Yes, ma'am.
But that was something that you knew was going to happen, that you were going to work on the roads, take the winter off, collect unemployment, and then you know, hopefully go back to work. That was in the plan.
Yeah. In years past, when things were kind of moving the way they should have been or could have been, if I got done with, let's say, a road project that I was on or another project that was outside weather-related, there was buildings and stuff in Cincinnati and surrounding communities that a person could go to and possibly get a job with. And right now, those jobs are, you know, few and far between. But this company I'm working with right now, their work is seasonal. But, I'm going to be going back to work with them, like I said, in March or April this year.
So have you bought any large appliances recently?
Have I purchased any? No.
Any cars?
No cars. No.
Flat screen TV, iPod?
I do need a TV, and I'm looking to get one.
What else are you spending your money on these days?
Pretty much trying to, just keep the house, moving the way it's supposed to right now. We're not doing leaps and bounds and stuff. Unemployment is definitely, quite a bit less than what I'm, accustomed to making. I mean, I can pay my bills with it, but it's, I thank God we do have it. I've been doing construction for over 20 years, and I've drawn this on and off over the course of my career, and I'm glad we have it.
So what do you say to your fellow Ohioans who are very doubtful that the stimulus has done anything in terms of providing jobs?
Well, just for one thing in particular, I have a friend of mine that works for the railroad, Norfolk Southern, and anyway, from what he's explaining to me, that right now that their business is picking up. They were, as a matter of fact, they had a hiring freeze on everything. They were laying people off. And he's telling me now that they are hiring back, and they have hired new employees. And as we all know, the railroads, it's transportation, they move steel. They move other things, cars, other materials. And he's telling me that the stuff's moving. So, I mean, there's a lot of people in Ohio that are not affected by this. But I think over time it will. It's just, again, it's just a slow process. As these projects come up, as these schools need remodeling and stuff, they'll be building materials and things that Ohio has a fairly decent manufacturing base, not what it was years ago. But, it will come.
We're speaking with Charles Dilbert. He's a road worker in Ohio. And I just want to bring in quickly, I have in here in studio here with me Michael Graybell and Chris Flavelle of ProPublica. Anything that you guys want to react to, the issue of going through hoops, I think is interesting, because this Recovery Act, on the one hand, there was this huge reaction after the bank bailout and after the TARP. We've got to put controls on how this money is spent. We've got to make sure it goes to the right people. But on the other hand, there's also a way that necessarily puts the brake on the whole process.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's the administration, in a little bit of a way, oversold the stimulus in terms of the speed. They oversold the speed of the stimulus package, giving the impression that this was not going to create jobs months from now, but create jobs immediately. And what we saw is, because of the way that government works, and the folks at the Congressional Budget Office said this, that most of the money was going to start coming in the last quarter of the fiscal year, which was, during the fall. And now, during the winter and spring, is when we're going to see a lot more of the stimulus money going out and getting into people's pockets.
Thanks.
And Nathaniel Johnson out there in California. California's obviously been one of the worst hit states. What is the sense there among the populace about whether the stimulus is creating jobs and helping out?
Well, I think people are noticing that, they're seeing the signs on the roadways. But it's a
tough
thing.
Thank you, Charlie. I said thank you for putting the signs on the roadways, right?
But they also see the workers slowing them down. It's sort of damned if you do, damned if you don't type of thing, because it's California's
right.
Still really hurting. And
right. It says damned if you do, damned if you don't, I think could be the theme of the stimulus, right? It's like, spend the money quickly, but, make sure it's spent well. And, let's build something for the future, but let's make sure that it's been something that's planned on for 20 years.
Exactly. And, that there are the organs in place to do this road work. Caltrans has all these great projects. Let's build them. But there really aren't the organs in place to build these far-reaching, futuristic mobility options of the future. And so people are, you know, people are starting to feel like, yeah, there's something happening, but man, my pocketbook is still empty.
It tells you something about the dearth of visionary transportation thinking, perhaps, in the past several decades. All right, thank you very much, Charlie Delbert from Ohio. Thanks so much for Nathaniel Johnson for your time, for calling us from KELW in San Francisco. And we will be back with Chris Flavelle and Michael Graybell of ProPublica to talk about high-speed rail and other cool things, and maybe some not-so-cool things that might be funded by the stimulus.
Everybody's working in this town, and it's worried me night and day. Everybody's working in this town, and it's worried me night and day. Yes, that mean working too. Had to work for the WPA.
Hey everyone, it's Andrea Bernstein. I'm here in the studio with Chris Flavelle and Michael Graybell of the nonprofit newsroom ProPublica. And we are also joined now from Minnesota Public Radio, Dan Olson. Hi, Dan. How are you?
Hi, Andrea. Very good. Nice to talk to you.
So nice to talk to you, too. We've been talking about the stimulus and what people are going to remember decades from now, from what has happened in the past year and what will happen in the next few years from the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act. So tell us the view from Minnesota. Is there anything that's going on there that people will be able to point to and say this was something that was built under ERA?
There is. There's a nice big bridge going up over the Mississippi. The Lowry Avenue Bridge, one of the many crossings across the Mississippi River here in Minneapolis, and it has about $10 million of stimulus money going towards it to help pay for the replacement. It was a nice big splash. People will remember that when the bridge was demolished, an implosion fell into the river, had to fish that out. And now, of course, the construction will begin.
Now, this is not the bridge. This is not the bridge that was infamous for collapsing.
Let's be clear, this is not the 35W bridge, the span which is up and running and doing fine and hasn't collapsed lately, thank God. And this is a different bridge. We have lots of bridges spanning the Mississippi and the Twin Cities. And this Lowry Bridge connects two historic neighborhoods. Folks are going to be delighted when it's built because it will allow them to shorten their commute a little bit and get to their happy hours a little bit faster.
And so they're going to be drinking and driving?
Well, you know, we shouldn't say that, should we? No, they'll be remembering it for a long time. That bridge will last 100 years.
Would it have not happened without the Recovery Act, or would it have been, you know, noticeably slowed?
I think noticeably slowed is the way to put it. The bridge is closed. It was closed for safety reasons. You know, that 35W bridge collapse just sobered everybody, not just here but across the country. So that those bridge deficiencies were found. The bridge was closed. The stimulus money, you could argue, I think many people would argue, came along just at the right time for the Lowry Avenue Bridge.
Now, I understand the Stimulus Act is also funding, in Minnesota, living snow fences.
Oh, I knew you were going to ask about that. Well, that did cause
Andrea. Let me just pause and ask you now, how much snow do you have there?
Well, we don't have as much as Washington, D.C. Let's be clear. We have been spared. We do have a couple feet on the ground, and it's perfect for skiers and the snowmobile crowd. They just love it, but you know, really, the East Coast has been hit harder this year than we have here.
All right, we'll be talking to Washington in just a moment. But first, tell us what a living snow fence is.
Yeah, well, you know, we're out in the prairie out here. This is Laura Ingalls Wilder country, and the wind blows across the plain and other Broadway lyrics you can think about. And, you know, when the snow gets blowing, it'll cover up that rural intersection, and then the plows have to go through. So how to cure that? Well, plant some shrubs, plant some trees, slow that snow down, you know, a couple hundred yards.
So this is a literal green job.
You've got it, yes. This is the meaning of the word green job. You've got it.
So there are trees planted being under the stimulus. Trees being planted under the stimulus. All right, so since started with the Washington, D.C. snow metaphor, buried under, you know, things coming to a halt, let's go now to David Schultz, who's joining us from Washington. Hi, David. How are you?
Very good, very good. We're still digging out.
So government is still at a standstill there?
Actually, they opened today for the first day all week. So they're back to work for the federal government.
All right. So and what are you noticing in your area? Which is, you know, I think as we talk to David, we should keep in mind that all the people that are running the federal government are every day in the Washington, D.C., Virginia, Maryland environment where things are or are not happening as a result of the Recovery Act. So what is the verdict? Are things happening there?
Well, it depends. I think one of the big issues that has arisen because of the stimulus is in Virginia, where things really are not happening. I think earlier, a few months ago, the chairman of the House Transportation Committee, James Oberstar, sent a very critical letter to former Virginia Governor Tim Kaine, criticizing him for not spending the stimulus funds on transportation quickly enough. There were as of August 31st, there were only 17% of the funds that were allocated to Virginia. Only 17% of those have been funded. And Kaine responded to James Oberstar by saying, well, there are just no projects to spend it on. The state has cut back drastically in its transportation budget in the last 2 years to the tune of about $4.6 billion. That's billion with a B. And he said there is no wish list of transportation projects to spend it on. They're just, the state does not have a list of shovel-ready projects. So that's one of the issues in Virginia.
Yeah, this is Michael Graybell from ProPublica.
I wanted to ask, you know, they built in all these use-it-or-lose-it provisions into the stimulus bill, and the final one, I believe, is coming up in March, where states like Virginia and every state in the country has to have 100% of their highway projects approved, or they're going to parse it out and give it out to every other state who wants it. It'll be sort of like a grab bag. Is Virginia at risk of losing some of its stimulus money?
I think they're working pretty diligently to get that money out and get those projects funded. There's a new governor, Governor Bob McDonnell. He took office earlier this year, actually last month. And I think he's spending the stimulus money is one of his major priorities. One of his campaign, one of the items he campaigned on was allowing the federal government to, or asking the federal government to give the states permission to spend the out-year stimulus funds. So the funds that were supposed to be allocated in the fiscal year 2011, 2012, he wants the federal government to give permission to spend those funds right now.
So this is kind of interesting because this is the new Republican governor of Virginia, elected on this sort of beginning of this wave of anti-incumbent, some say anti-Obama sentiment, in part, people say, fueled by their discomfort with the economic stimulus. And yet, this Republican governor, it sounds like, is not going to pull a Mark Sanford before he decided to go hike the Appalachian Trail and say, you know, we don't want this money. This money is bad for us. It sounds like, in fact, he's doing the opposite. He's saying, bring it on.
Yes, that's very true. I mean, I think in Virginia, especially in Northern Virginia, in the Washington, D.C. area, transportation is the absolute number one issue here. I mean, transportation is about as clogged, you know, the traffic is about as clogged here as anywhere in the country, even including Los Angeles, which is saying something. So I think that for Governor McDonnell to sort of refuse to spend stimulus money on transportation would just be, you know, political suicide.
Going back to Minnesota and Dan Olson, tell us, what's the political environment there with the Stimulus Act? Do people feel like the stimulus is a good thing, bad thing, mixed feelings?
Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, one of your correspondents made the point earlier, Andrea, which is just absolutely key to understand, is that most of the stimulus money went to education and healthcare, and that's certainly true here in Minnesota. Transportation, while it got $502 million, that was not a drop in the bucket. It did not amount to most of the money. So, yes, there's been a political quotient to it. And here's the thing to keep in mind that I think some people have put forward here in Minnesota about the political discussion about the stimulus, and that is, in the case of road building and bridge building here in Minnesota, the reason the stimulus didn't rack up big employment numbers in terms of the administration saying we created 3,000 or 3 million jobs or whatever is because there were already so many people laid off and on the bench. So it gets back to that point that when the stimulus money arrived, they weren't indeed hiring new people as such. They were just pulling people off the bench who had been laid off.
Now, Dan, you took a look at the equity and how the stimulus is being funded. Tell us what you found.
It's not a happy picture. It's not a good picture. If the stimulus was intended to be a payday, Andrea, for women and minority-owned contracting companies, so-called disadvantaged business enterprises, It was not. It was a big disappointment. So nationally, the Transportation Department reports that as of December, about 2% of the stimulus spending went to so-called disadvantaged business enterprises. Here in Minnesota, the number was a little bit higher, closer to 7%. But still, you know, there's no such thing as a quota anymore. The courts have struck that down. But the aspirational goal, as they say in the federal rules, is 10%. Well, most states are quite a long ways from that.
Michael and Chris, let me just check in with you guys about sort of the national picture on the sort of minority and women contracting, and also ask, is this another issue where the Recovery Act seems to sort of have the hopes and aspirations of everybody? You know, let's pay everybody fairly. Let's get all kinds of people in working that didn't have access to jobs before. Let's make sure that the money goes out prudently, but let's make sure it goes out quickly.
This is actually really interesting because, yes, there was an expectation, I think, that this was going to fix all the ills of the past. And if you want to spend money fast, you kind of have to already have been a contractor the government was used to working with. So you did see a lot of the typical big contractors win stimulus money, and some of the new people are saying, I'm having a really tough time. What's interesting, though, on the federal contracting side, because there's all these special programs that are set up for disadvantaged businesses, minority businesses, Alaskan Native-owned corporations, they could very quickly give out a no-bid contract to these companies. So you actually have seen a fairly large percentage on the federal contracting level going to women, minority-owned businesses. On the state level, I think it depends on whatever the state contractors were used to work with were the ones that got the highway jobs.
All right, and that last word is going to go to you. Thank you very much, Michael Graybell. And also thank you from Minnesota, Dan Olson of Minnesota Public Radio, and from Washington, D.C., David Schultz. Thanks to all of you, and I should say David Schultz from WAMU. And thanks to all of you. When we come back, we'll take a look at stimulus funding in the biggest city in the nation and also a look at the future.
The metropolis of the Western world. To the visitor who comes by land, by air, or from the sea, a romantic panorama of towering spires and massive structures. A great city, a monument to man's imagination, testimony to his achievement. The home of 6 million people, it is also the financial and commercial capital of the entire world. Throughout the five counties which comprise New York City, evidence may be seen of the permanent improvements brought about by a great program which has removed thousands from relief roads. On Governor's Island, at the tip of Manhattan, important roads have been built and several buildings have been reconstructed. At the Brooklyn Navy Yard, a number of roads have been constructed and shops and warehouses are being built or improved. In this project, WPA labor is used and funded.
And joining us from the metropolis of the world is Matthew Sherman of WNYC in New York. I'm Andrea Bernstein here, also with Michael Graybell and Chris Flavelle of ProPublica. We're talking about the first anniversary of the economic stimulus, and believe me, we are having a stimulus party here. So, Matthew Sherman, is there going to be anything that New Yorkers associate with the stimulus 30, 40, 50 years from now?
There probably will be. I almost think of it as a mythology of stimulus than a reality of stimulus. We'll probably go down to Lower Manhattan, for example, and see a glass pavilion there on what's called the Fulton Street Transit Center. That's a major subway interchange of about 10 subway routes that's being renovated, and then this big glass pavilion put on top, for example. We're going to say that that's, you know, a, there might even be a plaque saying, you know, this is thanks to the Obama stimulus package. But the fact is that that project was well underway before the stimulus actually was even approved, but it was in trouble, and they were able to maybe get the project underway a little bit faster. But really what happened was they took money that was already slated for this project. They replaced it, the stimulus money. They used the stimulus money to replace money that was already slated for this project, and then they used that money to do other projects elsewhere or projects further down the line. For example, the Brooklyn Bridge is another project in the city undertaken by the City Department of Transportation. They're going to be repainting the bridge, redoing the roadways. That was already so well underway, but thanks to the stimulus money, they're able to take that money that was supposed to be for the Brooklyn Bridge and, for example, repair the Coney Island boardwalk.
That'll be good. So the planks underneath your feet will have an Era Act of 2009 commemorative plaque. Michael and Chris, how typical is this, that money is sort of swapped out from state budgets?
A really good example of this, there's several programs, and I think the rule was essentially that you couldn't drop below a certain level. But as long as you spend it on the same thing, you were okay. So this has infuriated the special education community because you have grants that were supposed to go to special education that are being swapped to just pay the salaries of teachers in general. And they can get away with that because they're not dropping below a certain level in their special education funding.
So it's sort of like this issue of, you know, what is a job saved? Kind of a similar issue mentally. Matthew, in terms of, you were mentioning that the you say that the capital budget of New York City is so big, you know, and it's true. You know, sometimes people say to me, you know, oh my goodness, you know, Townsville is struggling with a $30 million budget gap. And to me, this is laughable because in New York City, this is the margin of error of one day. So when you have such a giant budget, can something like the Stimulus Act, which is spread out across the entire country, really have an impact?
Well, to one degree, we have a huge budget anyway. The Metropolitan Transportation Authority, for example, our transit system, usually spends around $4 billion a year on big capital projects, digging subway lines, station rehabilitations, etc. So all they're getting with the stimulus is 25% of that, $1 billion. And we're probably spending that 25% over the next 3 or 4, maybe 5 years, right? By 2015, I think it's the deadline that we have to have it all spent out. So in a way, no, it's not going to. On the other hand, we're receiving a lot more than any other municipality in the country, probably. I think it's almost a question of how much do we spend normally and what are the various priorities of different municipalities. Mayor Bloomberg has been very heavy on capital funds, as well as the MTA in recent years. So it almost depends on, you know, what have the priorities in the past been for different areas of the country.
Let me just jump in with one point. It's Chris here. So one of the big concerns has been, how do we fund projects without creating what they call a funding cliff, without a situation where you pump a lot of money into one thing or a collection of areas, and then after 2 years or 5 years, it just stops, and people who had jobs suddenly have no jobs, and you have a sense a new recession. And I think so. There's a flip side to this issue of spreading the money thinly. It means you have less of a psychological impression, but at the same time, there's less of a risk that when a big project ends, you're going to have a whole new cycle of people who had jobs losing them again. So again, we're back to that point of you're damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Matthew, what's an induction loop?
Glad you asked.
I assume we're not having any living snow fences in the New York City subway system.
Let's hope not. An induction loop is a copper wire that will go, in the case of the subway system, go around the perimeter of a subway window, a window to a subway token booth clerk. And a person with a hearing aid can turn that hearing aid to the T setting. And lean into the booth and ask a question of the clerk there, how to get to Carnegie Hall, for example. And the token booth clerk will speak into the microphone. Instead of that noise coming out as noise and being lost in the roar of a train rushing by behind you, that sound will be converted into an electromagnetic field that the hearing aid will be able to pick up.
So this audio brought to you by the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act of 2009.
$20 million worth in 640-some-odd stations, yes.
Thank you.
Is one project, actually, that is benefiting from the stimulus funding, and it probably would not have taken place without it.
Everybody knows the answer to that question, right? How do you get to Carnegie Hall?
Apparently a lot of people don't. I've asked this around work, and people said, okay, well, you take that train.
Yeah, or practice. Thanks so much, Matthew Sherman. I'm Andrea Bernstein, and I'm joined by Chris Flavelle and Michael Graybell of ProPublica. And when we come back, a look at what the Recovery Act will bring us in the future. And we are back with Michael Graybell and Chris Flavelle of ProPublica, and we're talking about the first birthday party for the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act of 2009. And we have talked about living snow fences, induction loops, a new bore in the Caldecott Tunnel, and an oculus, a.k.a. a skylight, in the Fulton Street Transit Center in Lower Manhattan. Colin Campbell, something in the Recovery Act may actually be remembered 50, even 100 years from now. What is that?
I feel like the ghost of stimulus future here. I think high-speed rail is the one thing after listening to everybody else's fascinating looks at little nooks and crannies of the stimulus. High-speed rail, we now know where the $8 billion will be spent. I think the Obama administration has satisfied some of their critics in the transit circles who are waiting for them to spread the money too thinly to not invest in big, big projects or to advance things. What we've got is a sort of front-to-back route between Tampa and Orlando for high-speed rail. And then the California High-Speed Rail, which is a $40 billion project, is getting about a little over $2 billion to sort of kickstart that. So we have two big projects that may actually break ground, I think are required to break ground because of the funding by 2012, just in time for the president to run for reelection. And then we have the rest of the money, another $6 billion spread to
speed. In the state of Florida.
In the state of Florida. The rest
Someone
of the money.
Say Missouri? Someone say I lost by 900 votes last time around?
So then we have the rest of the $6 billion spread around places like Missouri and to speed trains up to improve signaling all the way from sort of coast to coast. So we have a pretty good spread from two big projects all the way down to sort of improving rail nationwide.
So Florida is going to be, what, finished in 2015?
I don't think there's any chance they'll hit that. I think the best thing Florida has going for it is the rail runs in the median of Interstate 4. So the land acquisition, the environmental studies, most of the environmental studies, I think, are done. And the land acquisition should be a lot easier than it will be in places like California.
So what does this mean, high speed?
That's a good question.
And we don't mean higher speed.
If we start in Florida, the Tampa to Orlando route is just 88 miles. The trains there, they promise, can go up to 186 miles an hour. So that route should take under half an hour. But, of course, we have four stops. We have a stop at Disney World and SeaWorld. We have another stop in a sort of growing community in between Tampa and Orlando. And so these trains, you know, you have to imagine they may not spend a long time at 186 miles an hour. And this, you know, this train running in the middle of an interstate at times may move a little bit slower than the cars on the interstate. So people will have to get used to the big promise of bullet trains. We may not see that necessarily in Florida. It may not seem like or may not feel like that. These are going to be very fast trains, much faster than Amtrak, regular Amtrak travels, and even faster than Acela at top speed. The California trains are promising 220 miles an hour, and obviously we have a lot more distance to cover there, and we have the Central Valley, California, where there may be much, much fewer stops and a real chance to get up to a much higher speed.
So this is a historical note. High-speed rail was there was $8 billion was put in at the last minute. So the ghost of stimulus future almost never had a chance to, like, live and then die and then live again. Okay, we're done torturing our metaphors here. Andrea Bernstein, Colin Campbell, stick around. Michael Graybell and Chris Flavelle of ProPublica. Any final thoughts about the stimulus on its first birthday party?
Yeah, just one thought that I think should be raised is that the Obama administration, when they launched this, they said this will be very transparent, very accountable. People will be able to follow every dollar we spend. And I think it's worth noting 1 year in that, to a large degree, they pulled that off. The Recovery Board, independent agency set up by the bill, it has a website called recovery.gov, and you can go there and track spending by each individual agency. You can see how much they're spending and how much they're obligating every week, which is a huge degree of transparency.
What's the weirdest thing you've learned?
The weirdest thing I've learned is the immense number of steps it takes to spend $1 by federal government. It has to go through a billion hoops, a billion different offices. So when they say we only spend a third, it is hard for the federal government to spend money.
Michael Graybell,
I've got
weirdest thing you've learned?
One. The, you know, one thing in opening up all the books, you get to see how ugly they are. And and they're not pretty when you look at all the government data.
It's a case of, like, you know, be careful what you ask for. You just might get it.
But you look so closely, and we're so specific on this, that you could even find out now that somebody used stimulus money for $19.24 for breakfast at Fuddruckers.
Are you happy to know this?
That's journalism.
It's important to know. And what's interesting is you go
back. So is that a good thing as a journalist, like, that all this information is out there? Or does it kind of, like, you know, ruin the thrill of discovery?
Well, it's a lot different from stories I'm used to as an investigative reporter, because usually I have to go find the documents. Here, they're throwing the documents out to my desk, and I have to swim through them and say, what's important here? So it's a totally different ballgame here. But what's interesting with this Fuddruckers is you go back and find out that, hey, that's tied to a special education grant. But there's nothing in the data that says, how does breakfast at Fuddruckers connect with special education?
All right. Well, that's something that maybe we will know by the time the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act is 2 years old. Thanks, guys. Thanks so much. Transportation Nation's Colin Campbell and Michael Graybell and Chris Flavell of ProPublica. Thanks so much. I'm Andrea Bernstein.
This is Transportation Nation, a public radio reporting project about all the ways we get around. This podcast was produced by Andrea Bernstein and Colin Campbell and engineered by Wayne Schulmeister. Special thanks to Andy Lancet in the WNYC archives.